This is session 305, Extended Archival Description, Context and Specificity for Digital Objects. So if you're not in the right place, now is the time to go. My name is Chris Kiesling. I'm Director of Archives and Special Collections at the University of Minnesota. And we're very happy to have you here this afternoon. As difficult as it is to believe, EAD has been around for a decade. At least, it was 10 years ago last month that Michael Fox and I began teaching EAD workshops for RLG. And I myself am sort of torn between the, oh wow, has it only been 10 years? And oh my God, has it been 10 years? Back then, the question was whether EAD would be embraced by the archival community was unanswerable. Archivists who started using EAD then were pushing the boundaries of finding aids and technology. Now EAD is an accepted standard in hundreds of repositories worldwide, but archivists are continuing to push the boundaries of finding aids and technology, not just making descriptions of their holdings available on the web, but the holdings themselves available within their descriptive context. The papers you are about to hear will discuss a variety of tools and encoding standards, including DSpace, DLXS, SQL, Fedora, and TEI, being used in conjunction with EAD to maximize the value of their finding aids. And given the recent thread on the EAD listserv about whether or not EAD is a good standard to use for the description of photographs, I think this sentence is particularly apropos. Our speakers will talk in the order that they're listed in the program, and I'm going to introduce them all at the beginning, and then we'll hold all the questions until the end so that we make sure we get through the papers and have time at the end for questions. Our first speaker is Barbara Akins, immediately to my left here. She's at the Archives of American Art at the Smithsonian Institution, where she has been since 1991 as Chief of Collections Processing. Prior to working at the Archives of American Art, she worked at the Corcoran Gallery of Art Archives in Washington as a consultant and as a project archivist in the Washington area. She received her MA in American History and Public History Certificate in 1983 from West Virginia University. Ann Hanlon, to my far right, is project archivist for the University of Maryland National Agricultural Library Cooperative Agreement at the University of Maryland Libraries. Currently, Ann is team leader for the Special Collections Digital Initiatives team. As part of that team, she is managing the implementation of an image management system for the library's photograph and image holdings and investigating ways to coordinate that system with the electronic finding aids now available in Archives UM. Previously, Ann was electronic resources librarian for Bilkent University in Ankara, Turkey. She's a member of the Society of American Archivists and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Archives Conference. Jennifer O'Brien Roper, who's sitting right here, is the metadata and electronic resources librarian at the University of Maryland Libraries, where part of her job is to further develop the U of M library's digital library presence. Prior to April 2005, she was special collections cataloger at the Z. Smith Reynolds Library at Wake Forest University, where she was the principal member of the EAD implementation team, and they use NoteTab. Her degrees include a BA in history from University of California, Santa Barbara, and a master's in library science from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And our final speaker, obviously, Amanda, out there at the end. Amanda Wilson is a metadata librarian at the Ohio State University Libraries. Her primary responsibilities include developing the metadata program for the Knowledge Bank, Ohio State's institutional repository, and coordinating the EAD program. Since December 2004, Amanda has served as the co-chair of OhioLINK's DMSC EAD Task Force, which has developed statewide content guidelines and is developing specifications for an EAD finding aid creation tool and repository. Amanda earned her MSLS from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So we'll start with Barbara.
Thank you, Chris. Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Akins, Archives of American Art, Smithsonian Institution, and I'm going to introduce to you a model that will soon be available online at our website. It's a special project, and I'm going to go through it.
Did everyone hear her?
No.
Oh, is this? Sorry. Can you hear me now? No? How about now?
Better?
Okay. The Archives of American Art is a manuscript repository with circa 4,500 collections focusing on the history of American art. They have the papers of artists, dealers, critics, and private collectors, records of arts associations, clubs, and private galleries, and an oral history collection of over 2,000 interviews. Just showing a couple of our treasure items from our collection, an issue of Art Front, the monthly journal of the Artists Union that ran from November 1934 to December 1937, and Palmer Hayden's sketchbook, 1929. Here's a lovely illustrated letter from Moses Sawyer to his son David at summer camp, and Claude Monet's first photograph of Claude Monet's first studio in Giverny, France. This is a brief history of our digitization program. By 2004, we had fully implemented EAD as the standard for the creation of our finding aids. To date, we have 125 EAD finding aids available on our website and also through Arlen's Archival Resources Archive Grid now. We had developed a digital collections database using SQL Server, and we had started, we purchased a digital camera and began digitizing selected items from our collections. We use the SQL Server to enter the metadata and digital file management and use it for digital file management. We had also developed several pilot projects for digitizing microfilm. We have a long history of microfilming, and about 30% of our collections have been microfilmed. Thus, it made sense to look at digitizing some of our microfilm holdings. This pilot project, funded by the Delmas Foundation, digitized the microfilm of the Walter Pock papers and linked the resulting digital files to the HTML document created from an XML EAD finding aid. This project was the genesis of the current collections online model, which I'll be showing later. As you see, once you're in the body of the EAD document, you can click on a series heading and you're taken to the scope and content note for the series, followed by the container listing and the component unit title. By clicking on the link, I've taken to a thumbnail gallery of images for that frame set. Clicking on the thumbnail then brings up a reference-sized image. This is a project that really made us start to think about the potential for using descriptive EAD data found in finding aids as metadata and navigational tools for digital files. Last year, we received an unprecedented $3.6 million grant from the Terra Foundation for American Art to comprehensively develop our digitization program and dramatically increase online access to our collections. With this five-year project, the archives entered a new era of digitization. Our project goals: the full digitization of 83 manuscript collections and 7 microfilm collections, a complete redesign of our website, processing of EAD finding aids for over 118 collections, and to continue to develop a DCD to hold all the metadata and digital files. The grant supports 3.5 archivists to process collections, create EAD finding aids, update EAD finding aids, and prepare collections for scanning, set up digital file structures, and verify links. We have one cataloger to continue cataloging selected items in the DCD, one computer programmer to develop the online presentation of the digital files, 2 scanning technicians, and it supported the purchase of a Zoitro OmniScan K1000A1 planetary digital scanner. We have assembled a really smart and talented group of staff for this project, and their professionalism, hard work, contributions, insight, review, and critiques have made all of this possible. This is just a photograph of one of our scanning technicians using the equipment for scanning the high-resolution color scan images that are item cataloged. This equipment was acquired with an earlier grant. This is our new Zoetrel scanner. It's capable of scanning in black and white, grayscale, and color in ranges from 25 to 800 DPI. Most of our scanning is done in the grayscale mode at 300 DPI. We use color for sketches, vintage photographs, rare publications, illustrated letters, etc. Amy, shown in this picture, was our microfilm equipment operator for 10 years and had a lot of experience in handling collections, interpreting instructions, laying out materials, etc. This equipment, as you can see, has the look and feel of microfilm equipment, and it looks very much like her old Zoetrel microfilmer, which made the transition very smooth and efficient. Within a week, Amy was going to town on her scanner. This is just a screenshot of what she sees when she scans something. It shows the previous image and the current scan, and the red line is for cropping. We came up with a digital file organization. It's based on collection code, box, and folder. This is how Amy, as she scans a collection, she creates and organizes her jobs by this collection code. And it's the same collection code that's used in the digital collections database. She saves her digital files according to the file structure that matches the collections box and folder numbers, which is the Finding Aid container listing. Each collection has the box and folder number physically written in pencil on the folder, so she never gets lost. This is our Terra Project workflow tracking table. Just keeps track of our work. We'd never implemented such a project, so this is really very important. It's been useful to track our actual progress against our initial estimates, and we see that we're off quite a bit. To date, we've scanned 11 entire collections, which equals 45 linear feet, resulting in almost 60,000 digital images. With our other high-resolution scanning equipment, we've scanned over 19,000 individual items, which have all been item cataloged and entered in the DCD. This is how we use the EAD metadata. Just like many of you, the archivist creates an XML EAD finding aid using Text Editor and NoteTab Pro. We based our templates and style sheets all in the cookbook protocol, just as I'm sure many of you out there have. About the only thing that we started doing differently, other than being very, very consistent with the way we enter data into our unit titles, is that we now number our file folders. Other than that, the adjustments that we made to our finding aid creation and processing workflow were relatively minor. And this is a sample XML encoding for a collection to be scanned. Note that just as any typical XML EAD tag document, it includes series, subseries, folder headings. Each component level that is a folder heading includes two container types and numbers, one for the box and one for the folder. Each component level with a container type entry is identified through programming and then dumped into the DCD. All of the remaining XML data fields are also dumped into the DCD in finding aid fields, along with all of the digital files that Amy has created. This is just a view of the same finding aid in the HTML web version. This is the programming overview provided to me by Toby. He uses a programming platform that uses the SQL Server database with the Cold Fusion application server. All the finding aid content and digital file metadata are also stored in the DCD. The EAD XML file is passed through a parser that transforms the XML data into an EAD document object. The document object is then transformed into a finding aid record in the DCD that has linked records for each EAD component. The component information is also saved separately in the DCD as series and container records. A web template was developed for each scanned collection with a finding aid, resulting in the collections online page. It uses the finding aid, series, and container records from the DCD for web presentation. The digital files are stored in the DCD according to collection code, box number, and folder number. The digital files are then linked to the container record, where the container contains a component tag box, which also has a nested or child container element of folder. So we are using the DCD to repurpose the EAD data associated with a particular folder of scanned documents. One of our primary goals is to create the descriptive data or metadata once. We're trying to use the EAD master XML document and data for all derivatives for that collection. This model eliminates the need for a separate metadata entry or additional cataloging. The EAD finding aid is truly fulfilling the ultimate reason for its creation. And the result is the collection's online. Once called a prototype, this will be live very soon. The homepage is a template created through programming. Only the first two paragraphs are custom written. The rest of the data found within the collections online is derived from the EAD XML data. From this page, you can also go directly to, I don't have my mouse on, you can also go to the finding aid. Back to the collections homepage. You can click on the About the Collection bullet, and you'll be taken to this page, which is just the first paragraph of the scope of content note and the arrangement note. Again, all of this is derived from the EAD tag data. It's exactly what's in the finding aid. I could also choose to view the images associated with each series by clicking on the links at the series titles. The biographical note from the finding aid also displays on this page. Back to the collections homepage, I could click on View Collection, either the bullet or the icon or the tab button at the top, which you're not seeing right now. And I'm taken to this page, which includes the arrangement note, a list of the series, and images associated with each series. In most cases, the images are merely the first image associated or scanned for that series. I'm going to click on the image for series 4 photographs, which you can't see. Here I'm taken to the series description, the scope and content note for series 4 photographs, and a box and folder list of the series, all of which, again, taken from the EAD tag data. I'm going to click on box 5, folder 1, and I am taken to the thumbnail gallery and frame for reference-sized images of all items scanned for that folder. In this case, the folder contains only one photograph, Pierre Matisse at Calder's home in France. Back to the View Collections page and clicking on the image for Series 2, I am taken to the same thing, the series description and the box and folder list, which is a link. And if I click on box 1, folder 11, I get all of the items scanned on the left, and I'm clicking on item 2. And I get the reference-sized image. Again, back to View Collection. It's Series 4 photographs again. Here I'm going to click on Box 4, Folder 5, Photographs of Calder's Home in France. And again, take a thumbnail image gallery for all the images in that folder and a larger image in the viewing box. And just also make note of the use of the watermark for all the images. Back to the collections homepage. Just a few things to note. The navigation, you have the tabs at the top, which are the same as the bullets at the bottom. There's a search box also, which will allow searching the entire collection by words found in most of the tag data. The help tag will take me to information about using the site, copyright information, and information about the Terra project. The same information is also accessible through the bullets at the bottom of the page. In conclusion, a long history of microfilming at the archives made the transition to collection-level scanning relatively easy. Adopting and implementing EAD and XML allowed us to build a set of standardized archival descriptive resources and tools. Storing all the EAD XML data in our digital files in one relational database allows the output of the stored data from many different resources. And computer programming allows us to present the same data in different ways. Collections online is one way, but it could also be an exhibition, a subject guide or whatever. Our tools are not open source, but the same model we feel could be adapted and implemented by other archival repositories, and we invite all inquiries. We hope to go live with this next month. And Toby is here. I have a list of contacts. Karen, who's our project director, Toby is here, and he'll be answering any technical questions. Lauren is not here. She's our IT specialist. And at the bottom is will be the link soon to be live.
Standing, there are plenty of seats over here in the front and over on the side. So,
okay. Hi, can you all hear me? All right. As Chris said, I'm Ann Hanlon, and I've spent the past 2 years managing, along with Jennifer and some fellow archivists and a few programmers, the image management system that that we'll talk about today.
And that would make me Jennifer. As the metadata librarian, my involvement in this project has been in my role to coordinate non-MARC metadata, particularly with regard to the digital repository.
As archives and libraries digitize more and more of their materials, the need to effectively deliver as well as manage their digitized materials has grown. There is often a tension between the collective emphasis of archival description and the necessary item-level description of discrete digital objects. Take these three images, for example: a draft of a poem, a photograph of day trippers disembarking from a ferry, and a letter from a small collection of Civil War correspondents. All of them are useful on their own, of course, but they're all also, of course, part of a larger collection and the context that collection might imply. Traditionally, archives place a high priority on context, which is reflected in the deliberate organization and presentation of archival description, whereas item-level description derives its context from the attributes it shares with other similarly described items. Struggling with this tension is what this project has been about. In our presentation today, we'll talk about the concepts that informed this project, as well as the concrete steps that we're taking towards implementation. And if you listen carefully, you might hear a theme, because we also have not actually implemented this system. So, but it's coming. The origins of this project were in the desire for a comprehensive image management system for the various special collections departments at the University of Maryland. Like many repositories, more and more of our special collections materials are being digitized for a variety of reasons, including patron requests and digital projects. The digitized photographs, manuscripts, maps, and other materials were being stored on network drives, but it was difficult to determine, without opening each individual image, what the images were. This was one half of the equation. The other half was that some collections of images were described in a series of legacy databases, all created by different departments with different goals, and most incorporating different levels of description. And while some data linked up to digital images, most did not. But there was a lot of usable metadata in these databases. To give you two examples, a photograph collection comprised of 1.5 million images was described entirely at the folder level in a Microsoft Access database. And this is a record from that database. While this database did not adhere to national metadata or content standards, it did contain well-defined fields, and local descriptive practice was consistent. At the same time, an online exhibit of a collection of some 3,000 photographs was described at the item level. It also did not adhere to any national metadata or content standards, and its metadata structure was looser and therefore less consistent in application. In addition to the need to better organize access to both the digitized images and to archival holdings of images in general, and somehow use as much of the existing metadata as possible, there was also a desire to create a stronger online presence, to make the images and metadata available to patrons wherever possible, as well as a desire to link the images to encoded finding aids. While staff were eager to make digital surrogates of items from the collections available online, there was likewise a concern that collections would be underrepresented. In other words, we wanted to be able to communicate to users clearly that in some cases, while digital surrogates were available for items in the collection, those digital surrogates represented, in most cases, only a portion of what was actually in a collection. The initial solution we pursued was to create a new database that could consolidate the existing descriptive metadata and additionally would make digitized images available accompanied by an item-level record. But the fatal flaw in this approach quickly became apparent. One essentially flat system could not effectively accommodate the multiple levels of description, such as item and folder level, the varying types of input, such as well-defined title and date fields, as opposed to an all-purpose description field, and the variable availability of digital images. There was simply no elegant or even coherent way for a user to be able to make sense of what the system was providing. A single subject search, such as this mocked-up example of a search for Oriole, could conceivably have produced a results list like this, including one folder-level record, two digitized items, and a record that describes an entire archival collection, or represents. We came to the conclusion that in order to adequately address all of these issues, in particular, to be able to address varying levels of description, we needed to unite the traditional collection-based archival description already being used for our finding aids with well-defined item-level description, including subject analysis for digitized items. Working in concert, these two types of description enable more avenues for discovery of resources, a richer context for understanding them, and an efficient and meaningful way to provide access to descriptions of large volumes of materials. Archival description would be provided via EAD encoded finding aids, while further item-level description would be provided in a new digital repository. EAD encoded finding aids were among the resources at our disposal that already adhere to a national metadata standard. In thinking about how to make the most of our existing resources, we realized how effective the archival model of description actually is. For our purposes, it could be used either as an intermediary or as a final step in describing large volumes of materials. And in the electronic environment, the possibility of adding finer levels of description as the need arises is always available. We knew, for example, that we could apply this concept to the large photograph collection. We could make the subject-specific folder headings available and searchable in a finding aid, while at the same time allowing select item-level access where photographs had been digitized and described. Moreover, as photographs were digitized in a series about Baltimore baseball, for example, we could fill in what might become a coherent digital project on its own while still maintaining the integrity of the original collection context. While some very few collections already included some item-level identification in the finding aid, these had no relationship to digitization. The difference between that existing item-level work and the description we expected to exist in the digital repository is that, in a finding aid, item-level description, where it exists at all, functions essentially to identify a particular object or objects as it relates to and within a collection. In the item-level description that takes place in the digital repository, there is a fuller analysis of the object, best represented by the assignment of subject headings. That concept, that item-level identification, could take place in the finding aid, but fuller description and analysis would take place in the digital repository in the case of digital objects, is central to this project. Whereas the finding aid focuses on description of a collection and its components, description in the digital repository focuses on an item as a discrete object. At the most basic level, the item-level description in the digital repository includes descriptive metadata, such as title, author, and date. Additionally, each item would receive a degree of subject analysis not found at the item level in a finding aid. Subject headings enable users to discover these described items within one or more thematic contexts and outside of their traditional archival collection context. Additionally, further relationships can be defined that place the item within other predefined collection-level contexts. For example, one item could be part of an archival collection, such as our Baltimore photograph collection, as well as part of an online exhibit that draws material from several archival collections, such as an online exhibit about printing presses that might incorporate an image from the photograph collection, as well as a plate from a rare book, perhaps, and a manuscript from the personal papers of a prominent printer. We realized that the two approaches, the collection-based finding aids and the item-level description and subject analysis, complemented one another. The key would be to ensure that they not just exist as separate standalone access points, but rather as one interconnected resource with multiple points of discovery. This approach enables users to search for and find materials from either an item-level orientation in the digital repository or from the collection-level finding aid without losing the context or the specificity of either. In other words, the finding aid needed the digital repository because the item is not its focus, and the digital repository needed the finding aid because the collection helps place the item in its original context.
So up until now, we've been looking at the conceptual level of the project, and now we're going to take a turn and look at how we're implementing these concepts at Maryland. Finding aids were already accessible online via ArchivesUM, a system for encoding and serving finding aids developed in-house and launched in April of 2005. We wanted to build on this existing and successful system by creating relationships between it and a digital repository. We knew this would entail modifications to ArchivesUM and to our concept of what belonged in an EAD-encoded finding aid. For example, we knew we would need to investigate modifications to the existing style sheets to improve navigation and usability. What we did not have, though, was a system for delivering digital objects. Fedora, an open-source architecture developed by Cornell University and the University of Virginia, was chosen as the new way to manage and deliver digital content. It's worth noting that Fedora is not an out-of-the-box product. While we were able to define and customize nearly every aspect of our system using this architecture, we also had to allow staff programmers ample time to implement and test our specifications. So we had a lot to do, but we knew we weren't starting from scratch. We had the legacy databases that we've mentioned, as well as hundreds of finding aids already encoded and loaded into a functioning system. In addition, we are in the process of creating thousands of high-quality digital images as part of the celebration of the 150th anniversary of the university. And incidentally, the images that are the backgrounds of our slides today are from this project, which were from our university archives. This project became the catalyst for wresting control of our digitization efforts. Because we knew the development phase of the digital repository would take some time, we established a transitional database in Microsoft Access to capture that image metadata. This workflow, which we based on a system we observed at the University of Virginia, allowed us to not lose data while the system was being developed. The transitional database allowed us not only to track and capture metadata about any new digitized items created, but also to test new item-level descriptive standards. Between November 2005 and June 2006, over 1,400 items were scanned and metadata captured. So we already had hundreds of finding aids encoded and loaded into ArchivesUM. We realized, though, that the digital object repository would include items that were not part of archival collections, such as images from rare books, maps, yearbooks, or any other variety of material from other divisions within the libraries. In order to make our concept of providing collection context for individual items more universal, we wondered if EAD could accommodate an expanded definition of what can be described using the finding aid model. For example, our rare book collection included a group of rare serials and books dealing with German Expressionism that had been previously either uncatalogued or accessible only via their individual catalog records, with no easy way for a user to discover that we had, indeed, collected a small but research-worthy set of materials. We could use EAD to describe this group of materials in terms of a collection. In the digital repository, we imagined that a digital image of a plate from a volume in this collection should lead the user back not only to the volume that that plate is a part of, but the collection that the volume is a part of. Additionally, discrete digital library projects, such as an image-based project of World's Fair Ephemera from our Art and Architecture Library, would be described in an EAD instance, as the hierarchical nature of the finding aid could be a useful way for users to grasp the entirety of the project. In considering the mechanics of the relationship between an item-level description in the digital repository and collection-based finding aids, we needed to decide not only how the linking mechanism would work, but where in the finding aid the user coming from the repository description should find themselves. Ideally, all digital objects in the repository will include a link to an ArchivesUM record. That link will allow users to discover who discover an item in the repository to jump directly to that item's container level in the finding aid. We felt this was the best way to represent how the item fits into the archival collection rather than simply linking back to the top of the finding aid, for example. This slide illustrates what a user coming into either end of the cycle will see. On top is the finding aid, and below is an abbreviated example of the content of a digital repository record. The inset on the finding aid shows the item level listing and includes, I know it's really small and you can't really see it here, but it says digital object available. When a user clicks on that link, they are taken to the digital repository record, including the digital object for that item. Similarly, a user who finds an item through a repository search can click on the link here under collection and link back to the item in the item level in the finding aid. We hesitated initially because there was concern that linking directly back to the item level would not fit in with current workflow procedures. However, we have a system that utilizes unique identifiers generated automatically for each digital object in the repository and for each item level container in the EAD record. This slide illustrates how the mechanism operates via unique identifiers in the DAO and item level container tags in the EAD finding aid and in concert with the persistent identifier and linking mechanism in the digital repository record. With decisions such as linking into repository description directly from the item to the item level in the finding aid, it became painfully clear we needed to rethink our style sheets. Inspiration came when we saw how the Humanities Research Institute at the University of Sheffield had presented their finding aid for the James Madison Carpenter Collection online catalog. The ability to navigate up and down the finding aid while still keeping your place was especially appealing. Moreover, this approach exploits and makes visually more obvious one of the fundamental advantages of hierarchical description, the inheritance of information from broader to narrower levels of description. Whereas at Sheffield this had been applied to only one static finding aid, we had to adapt this concept to work with hundreds of finding aids, all utilizing different levels of description, some with series and subseries, others with only series, some with items, most without. We hope this change will make things more intuitive for users who discover a collection, for example, via a Google search. Ideally, they could land in the part of the finding aid where their term is located while still being able to discern its context from the whole. Here's what the new finding aid looks like. So this is what someone coming in from Google might see. And the same principle would apply to a user who lands on a finding aid by clicking on a link in the repository record. They should be able to quickly identify their search term. They can also see the box, series, and collection title. Notice the box and series titles are also links, circled up there, and the user can click on them to explore up and down the hierarchy, the box level, the series level, and the collection overview, with the subordinate components likewise available. We feel this gives the user a much better sense of why they might find themselves linked into a collection and where the resource they are investigating fits into the broader collection. One challenge here is in loading such a rich resource. The HTML versions need to be cached in order for Google to be able to search the entire finding aid. And in this new style sheet, that means thousands of HTML pages must be cached, rather than just one page per collection. So far, this issue has been manageable. Excuse me. All of these changes were steps in a positive direction in terms of our image management goal of gaining control of digitization and description while including broader access to collection-based description. The digital repository would be the site for broader public access to the digitized objects themselves, as well as their associated metadata. In order to fulfill this second goal, we needed to assess what, if anything, we had to work with for management and delivery of digital objects. As I've mentioned, we are using the Fedora repository architecture. Within our Fedora implementation, we have established a rich descriptive standard with rigorous minimum requirements. This standard is essentially a complex local application profile of Dublin Core and VRA Core, with all elements being applicable for all types of materials, images, audio, moving images, etc. In addition to standard descriptive elements such as title, agent, and description, there are also elements that require a deeper analysis of the item, such as subject, culture, and style. This breadth of elements allows users to discover objects in a variety of different contexts. As noted before, all objects also represented in a finding aid contain a link into that finding aid at the item level from the digital repository. So here we have an abbreviated non-XML version of a descriptive record for an image. In terms of context, you can see that subject is broken out a couple of different ways. Here we have topical and temporal. Here's the culture element that I mentioned. And here is the link to the finding aid that when the user clicks on it will take them to the item level container listing. As Anne mentioned, due to the time it takes to fully implement Fedora, we are not yet live with this project. We have been able to use the last year, however, to set the stage for what we hope will be a smooth migration this fall. The transitional database will be the first database migrated, and once that migration is complete, we'll begin to test many of our concepts about workflow as well as collection context. As some of the legacy databases are migrated, we'll begin to test our new concepts for finding aids and the use of archival description. We expect that the precedents set by both ArchivesUM and the transitional database will mean that a smooth transition can lead to better understanding and access of the digitized materials in special collections. By allowing archival and item level description to combine their strengths, we hope those materials are only not more discoverable by users, but also more comprehensible within their various contexts.
Good afternoon. My name is Amanda Wilson, and today I'll be talking about a project that I've been working on to integrate EAD and TEI descriptions of resources that are available in the Rare Books and Manuscripts Library of Ohio State University. This is a project that I've been working on. Again, it's not going to be live. And for me, probably not anytime soon. We have a faculty member who is really interested in the libraries becoming involved in e-publishing. And so there are broad policy issues, and I'm just down here trying to see if we can technically make something happen. So this is my project here, and I'll go over sort of the background and give you a little bit more context than I just did. And then I'll talk about TEI needs from the faculty member, the process that I went through, and the results of my little experiment. As I mentioned before, we have a humanities faculty member who teaches a course every year showing students how to create scholarly electronic editions of materials. So students learn how to work with special collections, they learn how to digitize materials, they learn how to markup text with TEI using scholarly text markup principles and practices. And also, so the last thing that they did was, the most recent project was to create these William B. Anderson letters. The faculty member works really closely with Rare Books and Manuscripts curator to pick out materials that they think would be interesting, both to digitize and mark up. So there's a really good relationship between the faculty member and the libraries right now. To get me started, because I had absolutely no idea what was going on, I looked around at different projects that were using TEI and EAD together to see how they were incorporating the two. These are just three different projects that I'd like to briefly discuss, and if you want more information about them, I have a little handout, but not nearly enough. So my email is at the end, and you can email me if you want more. The Watt Women Archive is a resource created by scholars to create an electronic edition of all of his works. And over the past couple years, they've been reaching out to the archives and library community and been gathering EAD finding aids to help supplement and provide context for other TEI texts. The Leaders Project is from a library school in the UK, and obviously they have been looking at linking EAD to TEI texts, and they've been really interesting because they provide different views of objects. They are looking at transcriptions, images of those transcriptions, context, which is actually a finding aid, and also metadata, which is actually technical information about the images and the transcriptions. So that's been really interesting. And finally, the Barren Lands Digital Collection, which is at the University of Toronto, I believe, is really interesting because, like Marilyn just showed us, they're using EAD descriptions to enhance their digital item level descriptions of resources. So in my research and looking at those projects and different projects, I found that in general, TEI community is interested in having access by topic or keyword or subject to all types of digital materials. They're also interested in having images and transcriptions available. And finally, they want context. They want some sort of bibliographic description or collection description to help them place a textual resource within its appropriate context. And specifically, I wanted to look at our faculty member and see what he'd been doing. They create a website every year after creating an electronic edition of work, so I want to see what they've been doing and to see if the libraries can meet these needs. So this is just a screenshot of the project homepage. It has all types of information available, and you probably can't read that. But this is just a different idea of the types of information available. They talk about the letters, give context for the letters. They talk about the editorial team, and they talk about the markup guidelines that they're using in general. And also, there's a table of contents of the letters, which to me, when I first looked at it, looked kind of nice, like a component-level description of all the letters involved in the collection. So I thought, oh, they're on the right track. And this is just further down, just a looking at the table of contents of these letters. Also on this website is a lot of information about the scholarly process of creating these electronic editions and what they had to do, which I don't think we can do with EAD, but I'll try anything. All right, what's really important is that there are four views. there are, oh, and also a big push at Ohio State is for librarians and archivists to go out into campus and really try to solicit content and integrate all these wonderful digital resources that are created across campus. So this is another impetus to go out and reach these people. Anyway, okay, so there are four views for each of the reach of the letters. The first view is an introduction, which if you look through, is really just information from the TEI header. So giving information about the source document, about how they marked it up, and about revisions that are there. The second view is a reading view, and this is actually a summary of the letter, the a basic transcription that just keeps paragraphs and just the text of the letter, and finally notes about the markup and scholarly stuff that they enjoy. And finally, the diplomatic view is great. It starts with a summary again, but this one actually has all the line breaks, any deletions made by the original author are marked, anything in the margins is marked, anything they could ever want to do is here in this diplomatic view, as well as a link to a page image of this transcription. And finally, the XML source view is what it says, XML source, the TEI file. And what I've sort of underlined, which I'm sorry you all cannot see, is the fact that the type of TEI header is AACR2. So again, they're saying that information provided in this TEI header is sufficient to create an AACR2 bibliographic record. So again, they're thinking forward about how they could describe these things within library context and provide wider access to their materials. And in thinking about how I could possibly replicate this, Ohio State has several different options at both the institutional and consortial level to deliver XML files and digital projects. Right now, I selected DLXS, which is from Michigan. I can't remember what it stands for. I'm sorry right now. I'm sure you probably know. Because right now we're using DLXS at OhioLINK to develop our Finding Aid repository, and we already use DLXS to deliver ebooks and e-text, which is based on a text class DTD. And when working with OSU's WebBooks project, our own ebooks project, we've been using TEI to mark up those texts. So I said we'd go with DLXS. And the process here is very proactive. Again, going back to librarians and archivists reaching out to the community and soliciting digital content. So my process was going out and retrieving the metadata and the images that was available. So it was great. He has this website. The descriptions are there. And the images are actually stored in another unit on campus. But you can just go to the Web Media Collective, click a button, and get a large zip file full of all the TIFF files. So really easy for us, in this case, to go out and retrieve the content that we need. Additionally, I had to convert the images. They weren't into format, so I had to convert them. Also get links. I had to decide how I wanted to link from EAD to these TEI texts and how I wanted that to look. And in this case, actually load TEI before I loaded the EAD files to make sure the links worked. And finally, incorporate the TEI descriptions of these these resources into, a new finding aid that I had to create. And finally, load the files and images. OhioLINK, DLXS is an OhioLINK software product, so I just want to thank publicly Sheila Yeh at OhioLINK. She took my ideas and actually implemented them and did all the programming. So I just wanted to be sure to tell her. Okay, my goal for this project was to try to make it as easy as possible because we all have a lot of work to do and we don't want to sort of reinvent the wheel. And the class and the faculty member have already worked really hard to mark up these TEI texts to the best of their ability. And so it's good. If it works for them, it works for their community, let's keep it just like it is and just sort of incorporate it into our own work. So I wanted to be able to add the item description to EAD with no editing, just plop it in. And that worked perfectly. I did it actually manually, but with a TEI header, and they're both being in XML, you can write a style sheet to pull out information from the TEI header and create a component level description. Maybe like that, not like that, but very quickly. It can happen. And the second thing I did was I wanted to load this TEI, which actually worked to create this website, so it, we know that it validates, and incorporate that into DLXS. That was, we're still working on that right now, but we have some starts and we know where to go. I'll talk about some of the problems with that later. Before we even had to load the TI, I had to make sure it validated with the text class DTD, which is in DLXS. And that took a lot of massaging on both my part and Sheila's part. And then after, once we got the letters into DLXS, there were some other issues. While it did validate, in order to display correctly in DLXS, we need to rearrange the order of some of the elements there. So my primary goal really was to incorporate TEI into the EAD finding aid that we have. So go down to the item level description and somehow you either get the transcription or other item level information into DLXS. And also I wanted to find some ways to link back to the faculty members' website, because there's a lot of information there that is just not appropriate and relevant to an EAD finding aid, like how they determined what a D was, uppercase D or lowercase D. I mean, that doesn't belong, but it does definitely have a place for the community. And with TEI, I really wanted to see if we could replicate that page that I showed you before, his table of contents page, with links to all the different views and to sort of replicate that. So perhaps if we wanted some federated searching, which he definitely wants, perhaps we can do it all in one software system without linking back and forth. This is the finding aid that I created in DLXS. I did it very, very quickly, so pardon any mistakes that you see. And this is, again, a test site. What I wanted to show you was here under related material at the top level, I just put a brief description and linked out to the faculty website. So if you know that this is what you're interested in and you want to look at the letters and you want more detailed view, you can just go directly to the website and you don't have to read any further. But if you do, there's a surprise. Down in the container listing, what I did was I took that summary information that was provided on that table of contents page and put it in the scope content. And then I gave the editor credit, because it's very important. And also in a note field, I used an extref element to link to the full text of the transcription in DLXS. So linking to the TEI file in a different portion of the software system. And then I also just went ahead and put the actual transcription of the text in there, trying to get a full text searching available. And so if they wanted to find out more about this transcription, more information, they could click on the link, or there it is right there. You don't have to go any further. And a second approach I took was to actually, instead of put out the full transcription of each letter, I just inserted the summary and a scope and content note of the three letters. I made this component level a series and described each one, and again provided links to the transcription in DLXS here. With TEI, this is our OSU webbooks, which will actually come live soon, or is live. And I just did a brief search on Anderson just to find these materials. I only did two letters because there are so much massaging to do to get these things in here. You can search or browse by date, which would get you that chronological listing that the faculty member had on his page, or other information like author. Also, when you go and you click on table of contents in DLXS, you get this view of the TEI header and also a listing of each element. So again, this was, goes back to that introduction view that he had on his page. All the same information is here, it's just displayed a little differently, but it is here, and that takes care of his introduction view. The responsibility statement is something that I wanted to point out. This was an element that after we put it in, after the TEI validated with the text class and we got it in, you'll see that there are, well, maybe you can't see, but it says creation of initial machine readable transcript, colon, creation of digital images, colon, creation of, or conversion to TEI2. And I thought, why didn't they fill this in? Well, they did, but again, the elements were in a different place and they needed to be inside the responsibility statement and they weren't. So again, once you put it in here and it actually validates, we need to go back and just do just a little bit more massaging to make it work. This is the bottom of the page, and at the very bottom there's a contents list and also a view entire text button. When you go to view entire text, you get three options to view the letter: HTML, PDF, or TEI. This sort of approximates that diplomatic view because you get page images. When you click on the PDF, you get the page images, you can print them out and do whatever you want. But you still don't get the line breaks and all that other information. The XML link sort of approximates the XML source, and I only say sort of because of all the massaging we had to do. So this isn't the exact same XML file that they would get if they clicked on it from the faculty member's website. So just approximates, comes very, very close. When you click on the HTML link, you get something that satisfies that reading view. You get the summary information about the transcript, and you also get the full transcription. Again, this is the reading view, and also this page link will link to the full page image. So that sort of, again, approximates the diplomatic view, but not quite, because right now with DLXS, you can't tell where anything was scratched out, you can't tell where anything was in the margins, and a lot of that specialized markup that they do to study is not represented here. So then here's just the middle of the page where, again, you get the page break, and you can go see page two, and then the notes at the bottom. So that was my experiment. Just some concluding thoughts, which are here. I think that we can technically provide something that would work for the faculty. I think we can integrate their transcriptions and their metadata sort of as is in EAD, and we can sort of approximate the same in DLXS, with TEI and DLXS, but I think we need more conversations with the faculty member, because I honestly don't know what is really important in that diplomatic view. If it was only that you can get a page image, we've got it, we've solved this problem, everyone's happy, federated search, we can go home. But if not, then we need a lot more work. And DLXS right now will need a lot of customization, and it would need a lot of customization, so we would need to talk to the faculty member again to get some more information. The federated searching that I tried to approximate by including the transcription in there it would kind of work, but I don't think it's exactly what he means. The closest project that I saw that did that was a leaders project, where they really used EAD, EAC, and TEI together, but they created a new DTD that sort of included elements from all three. So you were able to get a true federated search of XML, but it wasn't an EAD file and a TEI file together. I asked Sheila if we could have a new hybrid collection in DLXS, which includes both finding aids and TEI transcriptions, but they treat them way too differently. They index the files differently, and the searches work differently, so that's not possible right now. Again, a lot of work needed to be done there. So the next step for me is to go to the meeting with the faculty member next Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. and talk to him about all this information and see. If the e-publishing doesn't go through because there's too many policy issues, then we can at least, I think, offer him this and give him a bone until we have a consortial. Right now, Ohio Link is working on a consortial institutional repository based on Fedora, where we can really go in and do a lot of the programming that he would be looking for truly. But we could give him something to start with and be happy to be working on, and keep him from coming back to the libraries every 2-3 months asking for this information. And finally, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Barbara and Jennifer and Amanda. And we've got about 25 minutes now for questions, and I suspect that there may be quite a few. So I'll repeat the questions so that we're sure to get them on the tape. Yes?
I don't have a question except to say you all did a great job. It's a lot to take in, so I need a minute. But you said you were going to give us your contact information.
Oh, could you hit space?
If you can't read it, it's wilson.1596@osu.edu. That's Amanda's contact information.
It's convertible to
EAD? Absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry.
The question was whether the OSU project would work with the faculty to help him standardize his TEI so it would work better in DLXS.
Yes, I would. One of the other issues that I forgot to mention is that DLXS is meant to deal with ebooks, which is a sort of a different tag set in TEI than letters. So they had tags like hand, where you identified different people's handwriting in the letter, which, of course, is not applicable to ebooks. So I think we would definitely need to work with him to see how we could either modify DLXS to handle those types of information or build something else, which will take time.
Does Amanda anticipate the faculty member being open to suggestions?
I'm going to...
How could he resist her?
What else? I think I'm going to put another colleague of mine on the spot, Amy McCrory. She's worked with him longer than I have, so Amy, do you have any...
The short answer is yes, but there will need to be a dialogue. Yes.
I have a question for Barbara from the Archives of American Art.
Yes.
When you derive the metadata for your digitized images from the EAD finding aids, is there ever any additional metadata provided, or does it not go past collection title, folder title, collection number, folder number?
No, we're doing two different levels of digitization. One is the high resolution where we do all of the item level cataloging that goes into the digital collections database. I call it production level scanning, but it's collection level scanning. And we felt that the only way that we could actually implement collection level scanning would be to get rid of item level cataloging. We just couldn't do it. So that's what led us to using folder, using the finding aid as it was meant to be used. This is the description, this is the metadata for these documents, whether they be original documents or whether they be scanned documents or digital files. I should let Karen answer that question, but I think it's a mix of just about everything. Yeah, some of it is patron-driven. Some of it are other special grant projects that we've been doing, like sketchbooks, diaries. We had a project where we did photographs of artists. Some of it is internally driven. Some is patron-driven. Some of it results from online exhibitions. So it's a lot of different things. It's a folder of documents, just as it is in a finding aid. It's a folder of documents, just as when you create a finding aid, you don't item level identify each document. Well, very rarely. I know that sometimes we do, but it's the same. It's the same. Amy's file structure is box folder, box one, folder one. There is an order of the documents, but it's just as they appear in the folder. It's just the archival arrangement of the material within the folder, the archival arrangement of the folders within the boxes, which matches up with the intellectual arrangement of the collection, which matches the component units, the CO levels within the finding aid. So all of the arrangement of the collection is the metadata for the collection. I don't know if that makes sense.
No.
We have 4,500 collections. We're only focusing on process collections. Part of this project, this is a 5-year project. As we process the collections, we then move them over to scanning, just like we used to do for microfilming. We're processing, I think I said, 118 collections and creating the EAD finding aids for those. And those are not even all of those collections will be scanned, obviously. I think our goal is 80. I can't remember, Karen, isn't it something like that? Yeah, I think our goal is to get 80 collections scanned.
The question is whether in the OSU project, or in the Maryland project, sorry, you can search at the high level and at the item level across all the collections.
You can. Yes, you can. And that's actually something that we're hoping to improve on as we work further on this project. Archives UM was something that was developed and launched in 2005, actually, by Jenny Levine, who's here. And so now that we're working further on this, Jenny Levine and a couple other people. And so while we're working, as part of this project, we're actually working to improve some of the search capabilities there. So.
Yes, Scott.
Notice the front end of cold fusion with references more than so using ASP as part of the programming module. My mistake is
our project was uses cold fusion.
You are using cold fusion and ASP.
We're using Cold Fusion. I am not the computer programmer here. Toby is here to answer any really technical questions, and that's probably beyond me. I know we're using Cold Fusion, PHP programming. Cold Fusion.
This has more to do with just my particular skill set as a developer, is that I'm particularly experienced with Cold Fusion. So both the tool that parses the XML file.
Our finding aids are created just based on the EAD tags. We don't encode individual words within our finding aids as search terms. Google picks up on it. Big pickup. We did start adding cataloging terms to our finding aids, but again, they're not really search terms for internet searching.
But many of your searches probably have well-recognizable names.
If you entered Alexander Calder, you're going to get a hit. I mean, it's just because it's there. It's not because we encoded it as name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it does have that capability. It's not something that we do. I'm not sure. I can't speak for the rest of the archival community as to whether they're doing any special encoding within their text. I don't know if they are or not.
This might be a better question for the Maryland project, since they're doing both collection and item level description.
In the finding aids, I don't think we do any particular tagging within, like, for example, scope and content note or a collection level description. But we do add collection level subject headings to most of our finding aids. But other than that, like, for example, we don't, that I know of, we don't have processing guidelines that say to think about keywords, you know, when you're writing, like, a paragraph about, you know, the Farmers Institute or something like that. I think it's probably, you know, as fuzzy as anything.
It's okay.
Sorry. I think we don't add a lot of subject headings. And so, you know, we just choose sort of broad subject headings at that level. But at the item level description that we talked about for digital objects, you would get more granular subject headings for those particular items. But like we said, those would actually occur in the digital repository, and so outside of the finding aid itself.
I might just speak to that too, because for encoded finding aids, if you're in a system that you can search across finding aids, you can always do keyword searching. But to make things discoverable by Google, there are ways to encode subject headings, personal names, and so on in an EAD file that makes it possible for Google to pick those up. So archivists go through the same kind of intellectual process that librarians have gone through when they create subject headings and added entries in catalog records. So it's very much the same kind of process. So we're not ignoring what the faculty need, I hope. Sometimes you have limitations on what you can add. So that makes the decision for you.
I'm just representing the others.
That's good. Any other questions? Yes.
When I was in California,
the question is whether in the Maryland project, when a particular item is being selected for digitization, how you try to make sure that that's a representative item. Is that pretty much the gist?
Do you care that it's only one?
It's only the one, yeah. Do you care that it's only the one?
Well, yeah, actually we do. care. We care a lot. But that's actually one of the reasons that we decided that we really needed to connect these things to a finding aid in the first place, and in particular to the way that we hope that we designed the style sheet, so that if in fact someone did find this one digitized item, even though there are 15, you know, perhaps in a folder, that they could then go back, you know, directly to where that item belongs in the finding aid and see that there are 15 other items that don't have big red digital object links next to them, but that are also in there with that item. And then moreover, you know, as we're basing sort of our production of digitized images on patron requests and things like that. And so one other thing that we'd like to try to do in that respect is to also fill in, you know, where we see small gaps. So, you know, if we end up digitizing almost all of a small collection, we would fill it in just to complete it. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Actually, I have a question for the Maryland folks. I couldn't see the encoding very well, the XML encoding that you showed the example. But it looked to me like I think I saw a DAO there floating around. Mm-hmm. So are you actually using it to actually link to a group of objects rather than just one?
What we're using it, are you referring to like DAO, using DAO group? Like, I think that's what RLG recommends, right? We're not going to do that as far as I know. We're actually meaning for it to link to an item and it's so the digitized item as well as the metadata record, which would be wrapped in a METS wrapper as I understand it.
Okay. So. Mm-hmm. We grappled with this too, and we really couldn't figure it out.
Well, we haven't implemented it yet, so.
Remember, we're not live. Lynn, did you have a question?
I was just going to mention
a plug for the next session. Thank you all very much for coming, and please join me in thanking our speakers.